Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I do not believe my mother left that home under her own will. And I don't believe she left there alive. My father is my number one suspect. There's not been one word, one piece of evidence, no sightings, no contact attempts from my mother. And that is absolutely 180 degrees from what and how she operated. She deserves to come home. All missing persons deserve to be found and brought home. I totally believe they bought into what my father told them, that she got in a cab, a ghost cab that didn't exist, a fare that didn't happen, and they bought into that.
Hello, and welcome to episode 68 of The Vanished. As the story goes, 55-year-old Patsy Clark was last seen leaving her residence and getting into a yellow cab outside of her home in Little Rock, Arkansas on March 4th, 1987. She was never seen or heard from again. I say this is how the story goes because we have no evidence to support that Patsy ever left her home alive or that March 4th was in fact the day she disappeared. Her case was overlooked by the Little Rock Police Department and closed just a few years after her disappearance. Patsy's son David has been searching for answers to what happened to his mother for the past 30 years, trying to piece together a puzzle when it seems that many of the pieces were lost many years ago. This is Patsy's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. The thing about Patsy's case is that we don't have a great timeline to go off of. This happened long before the time of cell phones and social media where people were leaving digital footprints daily. The story of the events leading up to Patsy's disappearance come from the one person who her son, David, thinks had a motive to harm her. His father. This isn't just the story of Patsy's disappearance, but it's also the story of her son's 30-year quest for answers. Although Patsy's case was closed years ago, David told me how he was able to get it reopened in recent years.
You know, as I sit here today, 30 years and 4 days later, after she supposedly was reported missing on that day, and I questioned the majority of everything in the reports, how things possibly transpired, who was involved. It's just the way I am today because there's not been any resolve in the case from the authorities. You know, they've not provided anything. They're not working the case. It is an open case, but it's inactive. They closed her case shortly after it was open. I can't recall exactly, but it seemed like it was just within a couple of years or so it was closed. So it took myself and then a friend of mine who was with the Arkansas State Crime Lab here in Little Rock on a daily, just constant bombarding them to reopen this case. Well, they did, but then it's an inactive case. So they did that. They basically did what we requested, but they're not going to investigate it any further. They rely on me. I mean, when the detective that is assigned to the case calls me for updates on the case, something is kind of miscued there, and it's not how it's supposed to work. I should contact them, get a daily, weekly, monthly update, but no, it's not the case. Kind of got the cart before the horse on this deal. I believe that to be true in so many other thousands of missing person cases around the country.
Domestic violence is a topic that we've discussed on many episodes of this show. It's often a factor in so many missing persons cases. David's parents had a tumultuous relationship, which he and his siblings witnessed while growing up.
There are some things that need to be said that I really feel are critical in this case, so that it would allow an organization, an individual, the absolute wide screen view, if you will, of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today when it comes to her life. Her and my father met at a young age, were married, and it was like living with two F5 tornadoes. Domestic abuse was daily from my father to my mother. She was a victim of that, and she was of a generation that obviously thought, well, I've married this guy. I've got to put up with this. I've got to take it. The daily beatings, the verbal, the mental, any kind of abuse you can imagine, she was a victim of from him. And it was all in front of us kids. He had no pause button. He had no boundaries. And he respected no one but himself. So it was very violent. So that's what she lived through. And that's what her life was like, being married to my father. Now, in 1974, they were legally divorced, but they still lived together. They had one of those love-hate relationships. They could be around each other for just a moment. Next thing you know, they're fighting and carrying on, and he would beat her up. She'd leave. She'd come back. He'd beat her up. You know, it's just one of those very vicious ways of life. Well, I guess he resented the fact that she would leave, and it just would build in him anger. Pretty much every time they was around each other, he would beat her.
Several months before Patsy disappeared, she took a trip to visit David and his family. Patsy didn't have a car, so she took a bus from Little Rock to Fayetteville for the visit.
She comes up for a visit, an unannounced visit. Sometimes that's how she came to town. She wouldn't call you, write you a letter, anything like that. She'd just show up, say, hey, I'm here for a visit. Well, that's fine, but, you know, at this particular time, she arrived late in the evening, late at night, actually got off the bus and was walking to our home, and she was struck by a drunk driver. She survived that. She had broken leg, arm, a lot of internal injuries. So she stayed, after she was released from hospital, she stayed with me and my family and recuperated until she was medically released from her doctors in Washington County Regional Medical Center in Fayetteville. I've got her medical records and all that right here, and I use that as references for hopefully to help identify any effect if we ever find remains. Anyway, she's released fall of 86 and December, and I don't have the exact date. I don't remember this because I didn't anticipate this to happen. I didn't anticipate that she was going to disappear. I don't recall exactly when she left our home, but I know it was sometime in December of 1986. Came back to Little Rock, her home that she shared with my father. That's the last I saw or heard from her.
After Patsy returned to Little Rock, nothing seemed to be out of the ordinary until one day when David got a call from his sister.
March the 7th of 1987, I received a call from my sister that lives here in Little Rock asking, had I seen or heard from her mother? I said, no, I haven't seen her since she left here back in December. Why? Well, she claims that my father came to her home looking for her mother, saying that he hasn't seen her in 3 days, which would make it March the 4th. And that's where that date there came from, March the 4th, 1987. Now, I question that today as you and I are sitting here talking, because my dad's dead. He died the year after she disappeared, 1988. I really honestly do not believe that he was drilled and interviewed like he should have been. I believe the Little Rock Police Department bought his story, hook, line, and sinker, that he claims that on March the 4th, she left their home, Southwest Little Rock, got into a taxi cab, supposedly number 289. But today, my sister contradicts that and says, no, it was cab number 35. My sister's name's Debbie. I said, Debbie, there's no reference made ever to another cab number. She said, well, it wasn't 289. I said, well, now look, you made, my sister, she actually made the missing persons report. I said, now you went to Little Rock Police Department. You made the report in person. I said, so they got the information from you. And she disputes that. She says, no, I didn't give them that number. I said, well, they're not going to grab that number out of thin air. I said, no matter what the cab number may be in y'all's mind, I said, I don't think that ever happened. And I honestly don't. And I wish someone would stand up today and prove David Clark wrong in what I'm about to tell you. But I do not believe my mother left that home under her own will. And I don't believe she left there alive. My father, he had motive to do my mother harm.
When someone goes missing, sometimes the motive for why someone else would harm them is a mystery, and other times it seems crystal clear. David believes that he knows what his father's motive would have been and attributes it to an incident that happened many years before Patsy disappeared.
In the latter 1970s, 5 or 6, somewhere thereabouts, she borrowed my pickup truck, said that she was going to South Arkansas at the job where he was working to pick him up as a surprise. That way he didn't have to ride all the way back to Little Rock from South Arkansas with his co-workers. She's going to pick him up as a surprise. Well, she did that. Down around Star City, Arkansas, he's driving my truck. She's riding in a passenger seat, an old 53 model Chevrolet. You can reach over, you can touch each other. That's how narrow the cab is. She unloads a 38 pistol point blank in him and tries to kill him. So they run off the highway and crash the truck and all that, and they get him to Jefferson County Regional Medical Center in Pine Bluff. I don't know where she's taken, probably Star City Jail or whatever county that is, Jefferson County, I don't know. 6 months later, he gets out of the hospital and he comes home. He's just a shell of a person. Before he was shot, he was about 6'2", 3". 250 plus pounds, a big, strong guy. He came out, he's about 115 pounds, could barely walk, had lost a lot of his internal organs, lost his hearing, still had fragments and bullets in his body they couldn't remove because of the location of him. So he was not much of anything at all when he got out. But yet he absolutely refused to let the system prosecute her for what she attempted to do. Now, I believe that she had reached her snapping point based on the abuse that he had given her all those years, and she was going to put an end to it. I can't sit here and tell you that I I probably support what she did in a way. I mean, a person can only take so much physical abuse. I mean, when you got your head knocked off and thrown out of a moving car and just battered and bruised for so many years, he wanted her to come home and take care of him. That's what happened. That's this love-hate relationship that they had. So this carried on, and his strength finally, his health kind of came back a little bit, although he was still connected to a dialysis machine once, maybe twice a week because of his kidney failure. But yet they still live together. And I truly believe that he harbored some ill feelings on account of that. You know, it totally turned his world upside down. He could no longer work for a living, and he was basically useless as a contributing man.
David's father had said that the last time he saw Patsy, she had left the house and gotten into a cab. His story of where she was going that day doesn't check out.
He claims March 4th is when she supposedly got into a cab and left the home. Now, why would she do that? And he says, well, she was supposed to come back to Fayetteville for a court hearing. But the fact of the matter is, there was no court hearing. There was nothing scheduled. Now, she had a pending lawsuit against the insurance company of the drunk driver that hit her while she was in Fayetteville visiting us. Now, the state was prosecuting him with their charges, DUI, no insurance, and all the typical stuff they're going to charge you with. But her court dates were nowhere on the calendar. So there was no reason for her to come back to Fayetteville, Arkansas. So, and she knew this, but I think that was part of my father's plan to divert and distract. The cab company supposedly, and I use that word a lot, supposedly interviewed and investigated by the Little Rock Police Department. There was never, ever any records indicate that a cab fare was dispatched, one was picked up and taken away from that residence. There's never anything ever determined that happened. I know back in that day, things were different. They were, you know, their records were handwritten at the depot. I understand all that, but a cabbie's not going to be flagged down and then pick up a fare and not radio, hey, I've got a fare picked up here. I'm going to take it to XYZ's whatever street. They, you know, they're going to radio in, but nothing like it ever happened. The driver of that cab supposedly was interviewed. Nothing matched.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
Dealing with law enforcement has been difficult since the beginning because they never took Patsy's disappearance seriously.
Here's the thing, and I'll never be guilty of this again. Trust me when I tell you this. I allowed Little Rock Police Department to be the sole advocate on behalf of my mother to find and to bring her home. I trusted them. I'll never be guilty of trusting that again because of what I've gone through. It's difficult for me to communicate with the Little Rock Police Department because of the geographical distance. I live in Fayetteville, Arkansas, up northwest, and they're down here in Little Rock. So it's a 3.5 hour drive. When I was able to come down and meet with the detectives assigned to the case, I was not impressed at all with their abilities and what they had accomplished, which was absolutely nothing. They basically were ready to shut the case down. They had come to a conclusion that my mother had decided she was tired of her life and she wanted to pack up and move on. Well, based on what I know about my mother, that didn't happen. And I have the proof to prove that, because she was a person of habits. So they early on jumped to the conclusion that she hopped a bus and moved off somewhere. Well, we disagreed quite a bit there in that office. And then one of them popped up and said, well, now, you know, Mr. Clark, kind of pulled his britches up like Barney Fife on the Andy Barney Show. He said, you know, Mr. Clark, your mother had a history with us. And that rubbed me wrong real quick. And I stood up and, excuse my language, what I was about to say, but I said, what the hell is that supposed to mean? Well, she's got a record with us, Mr. Clark. And I said, that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I said, my mother's missing. She deserves to be found, and it's your job and your job and your job, the three detectives. I said, it's your jobs to get out there and find her. Well, now, we believe that she's decided to just move on, Mr. Clark. I said, it didn't happen. You don't know the story. I said, you bought into some lies somewhere. And instead of doing your job, you're going to sit back here and you're going to accept what you've been told. And I said, I'm telling you, you bought into the wrong story. Because big deal, back in 1978, March and in October 1978, my mother was charged with loitering, disorderly conduct. Big deal. December of 1984, she had a disorderly conduct charge. Whoop-de-doo. Does that mean that she doesn't deserve to be found? And that's what they were trying to convey to me. Well, she's got a record, Mr. Clark. Well, she grew tired of her life. She moved on. No, she didn't. From then on, I have pretty much tried to take the reins and run this case because I've got nowhere with them. They're unwilling. And hey, I am pro police, trust me. But these guys and gals down here, they laid down on the job big time here.
David has spent the past 30 years compiling evidence to prove that it would have been out of character for his mother to just take off.
There's not been one word, one piece of evidence, no sightings, no contact attempts from my mother. And that is absolutely 180-degree from what and how she operated. When she traveled, someone knew where she was. She always communicated. She always wrote letters. This was before cell phone and computer tapes. So someone knew where Patsy D. Clark was. And another thing, she depended on her Social Security monthly check that she got every month. That was her survival. Now, when she was staying with us in fall of 86, when it was time for her Social Security check to be issued, she would write and enclose a self-addressed stamped envelope with our home address on it, send it to the postmaster, Mr. James, down at the old Geyer Springs Road post office in Southwest Little Rock. She would ask him, Mr. James, I'm here visiting my family. Could you and would you be so kind to forward my Social Security check? I know this to be a fact. I interviewed him and he said, yes, sir, I did that. I said, I know you did because you sent it to my home. He said, I was not supposed to do that. He said, I bent the rules real bad. He said, but David, I knew your mother. I knew that she depended on this little bit of money as her sole support. And I said, well, I thank you for that. Okay. That's one of her habits. Now, her Social Security checks, Little Rock PD, they call Social Security Administration and ask in regards to activity on her Social Security benefits. They said, well, we've got 5 checks that were returned because they weren't picked up and signed and cashed. That would have been June, July, August, September, and October of 1987. Those 5 checks were returned from Little Rock Post Office to the Social Security Administration. Okay, that's fine. That is a fact. That happened. I don't just have a disagreement with that. But here's the deal. As LRPD are in the business to ask questions, and they're in the business to ask the right questions, but they failed to do that. Spring of 2015, after reaching a boiling point with them, I said, look, I'm going to take the case myself, and I'll solve the thing, and you guys can sit there and punch the clock on the backs of all these missing persons, you know, while the families of the missing are out here doing your job. I contact the Social Security Administration, talk to Ms. Edelton in the Little Rock office, explain the situation to her. I said, I know this is probably going to be something you've never heard of. I've worked in a missing persons case. My mother's been missing for 28 years. I said, can you tell me what the last activity was on her Social Security benefits? She said, yes, sir, I'll be glad to do that. She took a moment, came back. She said, Mr. Clark said, our system shows the last check that was cashed on your mother's Social Security benefit was May and April of 1987. I said, no, ma'am, that can't be. I said, my mother disappeared, according to reports, in March 4th of 1987. So if she's no longer around, if she's no longer anywhere, how can she get her April and May checks and cash them? She said, sir, I can't tell you who cashed them, but they were cashed. So who had access to that P.O. box was my father and a brother. Postmaster did his job. He sent the 5 checks back. I asked him, I said, do you recall seeing my mother in here to pick up her checks since she was reported missing? He said, David, she's never been back in here. He said, I know that because every time she came in to get her checks in person, she was in here for an hour. Said, your mother had the gift of gab. I said, I know that. He said, she would personally look me up to talk. He said, I haven't seen her since the fall of 86. So someone got 2 checks. Someone could have gotten 3, 4 checks. I don't know, honestly, the day of when my mother disappeared. All I have is the day that was reported based on the history of what I observed growing up in that household. I don't know for a fact that March 4th is actual disappearance date. I don't believe she left that home. I don't believe she left the home alive. I really don't. My father is my number one suspect. He's not here where I can drill his butt anymore and get information. But he stuck to the story.
David recently found another avenue to check to see if it could have been possible that Patsy started over somewhere else.
I was visiting with a forensic artist that's in California that does all the reconstruction art for the crime lab here in Arkansas, and she asked if I had contacted Medicaid, and I said, absolutely not. Have I done that? I've checked Social Security. I never even thought about the Medicaid. Well, I turned around, I called Medicaid, and they did a pretty lengthy investigation into her file, and after a few weeks, they contacted me, and their records indicate that from March 4th, they couldn't give me anything further than that. I said, March 4th, disappearance date, we show no records of activity on your mother. Now, that's another issue that's of very importance, and that's the fact that that was her the way she was covered medically. And that's what took care of all of her injuries up at Fayetteville. Basically, that disappeared, that activity, all activity disappeared with Social Security. So that pops their hypothetical balloon down to the police department that she packed up and she moved off. Because that follows her wherever she lives. If she lives in California, she's still drawing her Social Security check. She's still on Medicaid. There would still be traceable paper trails.
Patsy had been living in a mobile home park at the time of her disappearance, and the homes there were very close together. David doesn't think that her body could have been concealed on that property. I wanted to know what kind of searches, if any, were ever performed at Patsy's home.
They say they looked around. They claim, according to my sister, she claims that she witnessed them bringing a dog. I said, what kind of dog? She said, well, I don't know. One of those riding the back seat. I said, did they go in? She said, well, they walked in, looked around, and then they left. So to answer that question, I guess would be, they may have conducted a 25 to 35% search. But I don't know when my mother disappeared, honestly. If she disappeared closer to the first of the year, January or February, that would have given my father plenty of time to clean up. Now, keep in mind, he was not the physical strong man he used to be, so he very well could have and would have needed assistance. Now, at the time that she disappeared, about a block due north of where they lived, there was a furniture company there was doing some extensive remodeling in addition to their property, their building. A lot of dirt work, a lot of concrete pouring, a lot of work going on. That image has always remained in my mind that possibly could have been a place of a dump site because they were getting ready to pour concrete about the time that supposedly my mother went missing.
One of the challenges of a 30-year-old case is that often places have changed over that many years. This is a problem that David has run into with this building that was built nearby around the time of her disappearance.
That building is no longer there. That building was demolished, hauled away, and then the Dollar General store has come in there, bought the property, and developed and built, put up a building. So there was a lot of debris that was hauled away from that property somewhere. And I have made the attempt. I've located the company that did the demolition on that job, but they will not communicate with me as to where that was dumped at. And I'm not giving up on that. So anyway, based on what I grew up and witnessed, what I know about my mother, she didn't just pack up and move off. Now, I would have supported that 100%. She could have come to live with us. She did not do that. She didn't just hop a bus and move off. Now, she deserves to move off and leave that no good father of mine. But, you know, she had six children, six grown children. She had grandchildren. She didn't do it. Somebody did something. Somebody knows something. And somebody needs to be held accountable. And that's what drives me every day is, She deserves to come home. All missing persons deserve to be found and brought home. I don't care if they may have had a speeding ticket in their past lives. I don't care if they cussed at somebody. I don't care if they slammed the screen door. It doesn't matter. They deserve to come home. But I'm doing what I feel is right. I'm doing what I feel she would be doing if it was one of us, one of the children. I guarantee you she'd be looking to the ends of the earth. You know, I'm doing what I feel is right. I work the case every day in some way.
A few minutes ago, you heard David mention that he felt his father may have needed help to dispose of Patsy's body due to his own poor health. He suspects that one of his brothers may have been involved.
I suspect a brother very well could have been involved, younger brother. He was a very violent person, very troublesome person growing up, in and out of trouble. She had him arrested a couple of times as a teenager because she grew tired of him. And I remember the threats he issued to her. Said, old lady, said, one of these days I'm going to get you back for what you've done to me. Put me in jail. Well, he was always kind of like a keg of dynamite. He'd go off in a split second. He served time in prison for terroristic threatening domestic abuse toward his ex-wife. And when he came out, he was worse than when he went in. I don't have any physical proof of that. I just have a serious gut feeling about it. He made a comment to me after he got out of prison. I reached out to him and I allowed him to work alongside me in construction business, tried to offer him another opportunity to maybe get reestablished. Maybe he'd change. But we were on route back from North Arkansas and looked at a potential job, and we were coming through a community that is north of Little Rock. There's a gravel quarry right there by the highway. And just out of nowhere, as we come past that, he says, you know, you could tie a person up and weight them down good and throw them off in there. Nobody'd ever find them. And I looked at him and I said, what are you talking about? That is stuck in my mind for years. But my number one suspect is my father, because he is number one that would have the most motive to do my mother harm. Based on what she did to him, as far as I'm concerned, you know, in retaliation for what he did to her.
So we know that Patsy reportedly went missing on March 4th, but David suspects that something could have happened to her in the weeks or months leading up to that date. I wondered if he had ever been able to track down a good eyewitness account of someone speaking to Patsy or seeing her in between the time she came home from Fayetteville and March 4th.
I've never been able to come up with that. He is the last one that anybody reports seeing. He's the one. My sister, she couldn't recall. The other brothers, they couldn't recall. That just irritates me to no end because, you know, they lived right down here. They saw her. I lived in Northwest Arkansas. I rarely got to see her, but they couldn't remember. They didn't know. In fact, the two oldest brothers, they didn't want to have anything to do with this case, took a real bad attitude toward it. Well, she's gone, out of sight, out of mind, one of them said, and about hit him in the mouth when he said that. But because she may have embarrassed them at some point in their life growing up, she'll never embarrass us again, one of them said. I said, that's sorry that you would say that. You know, she brought your sorry butts into this world. It's the least you can do, the absolute very least that you can do is to help find her. You know, things weren't perfect at home. What child can honestly say, hey, I actually had a perfect childhood. I never got in trouble by my mother or my father. I want to see that child. I want to see him. I want to hear him say that. Because I guarantee you, everybody got in trouble, but these kids that I'm a sibling of, they held that against her. because they may have gotten in trouble once. We're not going to help search for her at all. She'll never embarrass me and my family again. You know, that's just wrong. So 30 years and 4 days later, I'm sitting here with stacks of files, paperwork.
David has spent many years tracking people down to try to find more pieces of this puzzle. What he has found has only increased his level of frustration with the lack of investigation into his mother's disappearance.
The previous owner of that mobile home park, I searched and searched and searched and finally found him. His name was Melvin Mayfield. He had sold the property and moved off. He lived in Little Rock. I went to his home unannounced and visited with him. And I asked him, "Mr. Mayfield, do you remember my mother and father living in your mobile home park?" He said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Do you remember what you told the detectives when they interviewed you about her going missing?" He said, "David," he said, "you're the first one that's ever come to me and asked me about the case. The 28 years she'd been missing." Little Rock Police Department had never talked to the man. As far as I'm concerned, based on what I've got, information that they have compiled in 30 years, I could put it all in a thimble that would fit on my little finger. And I keep in mind, I am pro police. I've got some dear police friends. I'm friends with the chief here in town. But these guys down in Little Rock, they did not earn their money on this case.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
David still works on his mother's case every day. Working on a case that's 30 years old can be a huge challenge, but he told me what his current focus is as far as the investigation goes.
What I'm trying to do right now, as far as the case, is the home where they lived was actually is a mobile home, is a mobile home park in Southwest Little Rock. That is still there. I would like to see that physical properties forensically checked. Now, I know it's been 30 years. But if there's blood in that mobile home, I don't care if they put new carpet down. If there's specks of blood somewhere, it can be found. It was not checked like that. It wasn't tested like that. Based on what reports I've been told, They just did a simple little walkthrough. Everything was in order. Nothing was tore up, destroyed, like there had been a fight or a disturbance. So they had no reason to think that anything out of the ordinary had happened there. Also, there's a vehicle that has been brought to my attention. See, my father did not own a car, legally own a car in his name past 1984. I know that. I've got that personally given to me from the motor vehicles here in Little Rock. In fact, I've got the registration on the car that I'm referencing. He didn't own one in his name legally past 1984, but yet he had to have something that he drove. Somebody was either shuttling him around, and the only person that would have been an older brother that for some reason stayed connected to my dad. I don't get it. It's a strange relationship. But anyway, he would shuttle him around for a while, but this brother I'm referring to, he was too busy. You know, if he did something for you, it was going to inconvenience him in his life. So he grew tired of helping others quickly. So I discounted that he helped my dad get around for very long at all. And I had been given information from an outside source that there was a large, dark sedan involved in my mother's missing or her disappearance. And that's all the information I was given. Well, I questioned my sister, what kind of car was Daddy driving when Mama disappeared? She said, I don't know. I don't remember. 2 days later, she called me. She said, hey, I remember it was a large, dark, some kind of large, dark old car. She said, I don't know whether it was an old Buick or Pontiac. It was a big car. Well, see, I didn't talk to her about that. I just asked her just a generic question. I didn't give her any descriptions. I didn't lead her on. She came to that conclusion and that recollection all by herself. Okay, so now I've got two people telling me the same. Last month, I went and visited with an uncle of mine, my father's youngest brother. And I said, can you remember what he was driving when our mother disappeared? And at first, he didn't recall. After a few minutes, he said, yeah. He said, wait a minute. He said, your Uncle Freddie, which is my father's twin brother, your Uncle Freddie sold your daddy a car. And best I can remember, it was a big old Plymouth. He said, I don't remember what color, but I remember it was a Plymouth. All this information surfaces that my Uncle Fred had sold him a car, basically, I guess, on a contract, because my Uncle Fred had a doubt as to whether or not my dad would pay him for the car is what I'm hearing. And until he paid the car off, he was going to keep it his name, but yet let him drive it as long as he made payments. Finding out what my Uncle Fred owned is a goal. I want to find out that car, what it was that he owned. And if I just heard a description of vehicles that he owned in that time frame there of in the year of 1987, if I can find that vehicle, I want to have it checked.
Unfortunately, his uncle passed away last year, so he can't ask him for more information about the car, but he hopes to be able to gather more information from his DMV records sometime in the future. David runs a Facebook page for all missing persons in Arkansas called Arkansas Comes Home. He's holding a missing persons awareness event on April 1st at noon at the Arkansas State Capitol in Little Rock. This event is for all missing persons within the state. Please check out the Arkansas Comes Home page on Facebook for more information. That brings us to the end of episode 68. If you have any information about the disappearance of Patsy Clark, please contact the Little Rock Police Department at 501-371-4636. If you would prefer to send information to David directly, you can message him through the Arkansas Comes Home Facebook page. I'd like to remind everyone that March is Tripod Month, and we're asking everyone to show someone else how to listen to podcasts. Think of all the great shows you listen to get you through your work day or your commute. I bet you know someone who doesn't even know what a podcast is. Think about the mission of this show to spread awareness about these missing persons cases. If everyone got one more person listening, we could double the reach of the show. If you would like to reach me, I am on Twitter at TheVanishedPod. I have a Facebook page and a private discussion group. I'm also now on Instagram. You can always contact me through TheVanishedPodcast.com. Before I go, I have one more small announcement that I'd like to make. Because of the support from listeners and sponsors, I'm moving to full-time podcasting. I've been working full-time on the show all along, but you can only do that and have a job for so long before you get burnt out. My hope is to bring you more stories because I have quite a backlog right now. So thanks everyone for listening and for all the support over the past year.
I work this case, like I said, every day in some degree. If it's not anything more than just mental search, rehashing, going over things I've done, going back through the files. You know, I've had a property search. I was given a location that was a possible dump site. I brought a search dog team over from Mississippi. They were so gracious to come over here and do a search. Bob and Paulette Weaver run the dog, search dog south. They came over. We searched the property after gaining permission from property owner. They had the local news come out and to do a segment on it. And we didn't find anything. But I was also told that she could have been moved, dumped, but then moved. Anyway, that's part of, you know, this is a big puzzle that I'm working here, and that was a part that didn't fit the puzzle, so, you know, basically it's removed. But this other place where they lived, if I can gain permission from that property owner to come in, they said they would come back over there and search that. But forensic searching would really help a lot, but I can't get LRPD to agree to it because they said there's not enough evidence, nor has there ever been enough evidence to get a search warrant for that property. A missing persons case has requirements, and that means that you've got to get out of the office, get your shoe leather on the sidewalk, and you've got to go knock on as many doors as I have in 30 years where you beat the skin off your knuckles and you got to ask questions. But if you don't do that, you're never going to accomplish anything. The one that's assigned to the case today, last time I spoke with him personally in his office, he said, Mr. Clark, he leaned back in his chair, put his hands behind his head. He said, we're a very scientific department down here. We have protocol. We've got laid out procedures that we have to follow. And we just don't get outside the lines. Well, I pushed away from his desk and I said to him, I said, well, let me tell this to you. I said, I'm not scientific. And I said, I think outside the box, under the box, on top of the box, inside the walls of the box. I said, because maybe that's why y'all haven't solved many cases down here. And I stepped on his toes. But you know what? It's not his mother I'm looking for, it's mine. And the fact that they don't have a vested interest in these cases, they're not going to do anything because missing persons are not a priority. And if they are, they're as low on the list as you're going to find. I'll tell you, it's difficult sometimes for me to keep a calm tone.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.